The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there. Thank you for joining us for this special episode of 13. I'll tell you why it's so special right after we thank our new patrons. Emily Toll, the Mistress of the Night, Anne LaForge, they call me Daddy, Mr. Tony, Kelly Jacobs, Crystal Cam, Dustin Lark Brown, Pamela, Carmen, and Autumn Yuri. Thank you guys so much for your support, and welcome to the Pod Fam. And if you're interested in things like ad-free episodes, extra stories, behind-the-scenes content, exclusive merch, or just like, I don't know, hanging out with us, then you should check us out on Patreon. Just click the link in the show notes to learn more. So, why is this a special episode? Well, you know you can always count on Ian and Bridget to bring you the scares. But I am a lover, not a fighter. And I like to make things a little spicier. Horror and spicy can only mean one thing. That's right. This is the second installment of our Sexy Slasher Summer series. Ian has written up a few stories in the classic slasher genre, and then I've helped turn up the heat a little with some sexy, spicy scenes, unlike anything you've heard on 13 before. If you're not into sexual content beyond what you've heard on 13 in the past, don't worry. Here on the main feed, we are keeping things PG-13. But if you find yourself wanting more, you can find the full-length spicy scenes available exclusively on our Patreon. Today's story is Tell Me What You Like. Are you ready? Sit back, turn down the lights, and now, on with the show. My boyfriend and I have been together for a few months. I'd had a profile up on all the dating apps, and it was a nightmare. I was just about to give up on all of them when his profile came up. I was intrigued, and I swiped. The screen changed. We were a match. We chatted for a couple of weeks and then met up. I could tell he was nervous, which was kind of a relief because I was too. But he started to warm up a little more quickly than I did. He was coming out of his shell. I had been single for a long time. I'd gotten on the apps because I was lonely and I just needed a change. I'd kind of forgotten how to do this part, the meeting and the first date. He was walking me back to my car, and I told him I was sorry for being so nervous. I felt like I'd wrecked my chance by being so reserved, so quiet. He stopped walking, and I did too.
Hey, I like you.
He held eye contact for a long moment, and I met his eyes. I told him that I liked him too, and that I felt so silly, and how it had been a long time. We held hands the rest of the way to my car, and then we said goodnight. Even though I'd felt better about how it went on the drive home, my insecurities got the better of me. By the time I was getting ready for bed, I'd convinced myself that he was just being nice, just trying to get out of the situation without having to feel bad about it later, and that I would probably never hear from him again. But the next day, I got another text. I apologized again and said I really liked him, but I was embarrassed and didn't feel like I pulled my weight on our first date. Maybe he was just really intuitive, but I think he could sense my anxiety. He told me again that he liked me and he wanted to see me. He also had another suggestion. He wanted me to feel good about our first date. So, why don't we do another first date? A redo. He said we could pretend we're meeting for the first time. Obviously, we don't have to pretend it's a blank slate, but, you know, let's just start over. So we did. At the end of our second first date, he walked me to my car again, and we kissed on the sidewalk. For our third date, he picked me up, and we did dinner and drinks. He told me that my eyes looked like sunrise. I told him that I liked the way his hands feel in mine. He drove me home, and we made out in the car before I went inside. On our fourth date, we went to a movie, and he put his arm around me. He grazed his fingers against the side of my neck, and for the life of me, I can't remember a single thing about the film. On our fifth date, I told him that I was glad I didn't quit the dating apps before we matched. And at the end of the night, I invited him up to my apartment for the first time. Once we were inside, it didn't take long before we were all over each other. When we were finished, I told him he could stay over. He was asleep within minutes. I had trouble sleeping that first night he stayed over. I'd had fun with him. I loved the intimacy and feeling connected. But I had this nagging thought. He was so quiet. I couldn't tell what he liked and what he didn't. He was so expressive the rest of the time we were together. But while we were making love, I couldn't tell if he was into it. He came at the end. He held eye contact, but there was just no passion. What if we were compatible in every other way but this one? What if I didn't do it for him sexually? I laid awake for a long time, but finally, at some point in the night, I fell asleep. When we woke up, it was around 10 in the morning. He didn't seem like he was trying to get away. We had breakfast, and before long, my late-night anxiety was gone. He wasn't acting like a person who wasn't into me. Pretty soon, we started kissing again. He was ready for round two. He must not be that disappointed. Maybe that's just how he was. That brings us up to the present. I decided to keep those thoughts to myself, and I have this whole time. I've even gotten over that insecurity about how quiet he is in bed, the worry that he's not that into me. We've been together a few months, and everything is going great. And while I've learned how to tell that he's definitely into it when he stays over, I've always enjoyed a more expressive experience. I like my partners to moan and purr and gasp when they like what I'm doing. It turns me on, and it makes me feel safe to moan and purr back to them. So, I decided that I was going to bring it up the next time we were together. The only downside to the whole thing is my neighbor. We share a wall, and we've crossed paths outside a few times. Early on, we'd said hi to each other, or waved. We never really talked, but it was pleasant enough. Women usually know, and I can tell when someone is watching me, following me with their eyes. And he does that. It happens when we pass on the stairs or when we get home around the same time after work. He's older, so I chalked it up to him just being a little creepy, but pretty harmless. But as time went on, I noticed more things that set me on edge. I would come home when it was dark out, and I'd see him in his window, the overhead light casting his shadow on the blinds. His apartment looks out at the parking lot, and I would notice a gap in the blinds where they were lifted up at eye level. he was looking down at something. At first, I thought he could have been watching for a pizza delivery or a visitor. But as it kept happening, there was no denying it. He was watching me. I also noticed that more and more, he makes it a point to park his work van near my car, maybe hoping to run into me in the parking lot. I don't know. The lurking really picked up when my boyfriend started staying over. Like he's jealous or maybe just nosy. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong and there's an innocent explanation for it, but I don't think I am. He's a creep, and I just do my best to keep my distance and try to avoid being outside when he's coming and going. But having my boyfriend stay over several nights a week definitely makes me feel safer. The next time my boyfriend came over, we were planning to go out to dinner. He knocked on my door and I stepped outside, happy to see him. At the same time, my neighbor's door opened and he stepped out. He looked a little startled to see us there, like he hadn't planned this encounter, like it really was just a coincidence. I hadn't told my boyfriend about him being a creep. I don't know why, I just never thought about it while he was around. So, naturally, he looked over and said hi, just being friendly. My neighbor gave him a little nod, but mostly kept his eyes on the ground. That was it. Then my boyfriend turned his attention back to me.
Okay, ready to go?
After dinner, we went to his place. He lives in a nice house in an old part of the city. We don't spend a lot of time there, because to afford a place like that, he has to have two roommates. And since I live alone in a little apartment out in the suburbs, it just usually makes sense for us to spend our time there. But his roommates were both out of town that night. I really do like his neighborhood. I like the old houses and the big trees. I like to imagine that someday we'll get a place around here together. But I'm trying not to get ahead of myself. When we got to his place, he parked on the street a few houses down. As we made our way to the house, I noticed a work van as it passed by. It looked a lot like my neighbor's van. It was dark, and I couldn't see in. And I don't know for sure, but I felt a sinking in my chest. And I had a thought, one that would gnaw away at me in the coming months. Was he following us? We watched a movie and hung out in the living room. And later, as things started moving toward the bedroom, I stopped him. I finally mentioned what had been on my mind. I told him he didn't have to be afraid to show me what he liked when we were in bed. He didn't have to be afraid to make a little noise. I told him I thought it was sexy, and I wanted to know that part of him. I wanted to see him get lost in me. He tried. I have to give him credit. There was a little grunt here and there, and when he came, he let me know. But he still seemed like he was holding back. I needed to take a different approach. I looked for ideas online, and I came across a little game. It's called Tell Me What You Like. The idea is to start small and build until your partner is comfortable. It said that before you get started, you should make sure that your partner is on the same page with you. They should be in the loop about what you're doing and why. There's no place for dishonesty or coercion. If you tell your partner that this is important to you, and they agree they want to get there with you, that's a success all by itself. If they aren't interested or just aren't able to get there, Well, you have to decide what you want to do next. Maybe that's a sign that you're not compatible on that level. And if that's a deal breaker, then maybe you should consider whether this relationship is everything you need it to be. I didn't want to think about bringing things to a head, forcing a realization that we weren't cut out for each other. But I really don't think that's how it'll turn out. I think he just needs to get into it, you know? In my mind, this is the last piece of the puzzle to make our relationship truly perfect. We had fallen into a routine, like a lot of relationships do. And the next week, when his roommates were home again, we were back at my place. He stayed over a couple nights during the week, and we spent most of our weekends together. I didn't want to push him too hard, so I didn't say anything for a couple of weeks. And to be honest, I'd been a little nervous about bringing up the game, trying to figure out the best way to go about it. That coming weekend, I saw my chance, and I took it. We had plans to go to a housewarming party for a friend on Friday night, and he was going to stay over at my place afterward. We were a little tipsy, probably louder than I would have wanted to be as we made our way up the stairs and by my door while I messed with my keys. Once we were inside, we kicked off our shoes, and I kissed him and took his hands in mine. I walked backwards, pulling him along with me, trying to put on my best, playful, sexy face. In the bedroom, I gave him a little push, and he played along, falling back onto the bed. I leaned over him, but stopped short of climbing on top, trying to do a sexy whisper. "I want to play a game." He looked intrigued. This was off to a good start.
"Oh yeah? What kind of game?"
"It's called Tell Me What You Like."
"Well, that's easy. I like you."
He strained upward to kiss me, but I pulled away. Staying in character, I pressed my finger to his lips and pushed him back down on the bed. "Before we get to that, I want you to tell me what I'm doing."
"Turning me on is what you're doing."
He wasn't getting it yet. That's okay. He would soon. "What am I doing right now?"
"You're teasing me."
"No. What are my hands doing?"
"You're taking your hair down."
"That's right." The room was dark, and the blinds were closed. But the light from the parking lot still seeped in around them. The bedroom door was still open, and there was a faint glow down the hall from the lamp in the living room. There was still plenty of light to see by. I climbed on top of him, straddling his waist. "Now what am I doing?"
"You're on top of me."
With every answer, I gave him an encouraging little purr. I crossed my arms at my waist and lifted my top almost to my bra. "Now what am I doing?"
"You're taking off your shirt?"
Having gotten the answer I wanted, I lifted my arms over my head, taking my top with them. This was going to be fun. If you like where this is going and you want to hear more, our patrons are getting the full erotic scene, unlike anything you've heard on 13 before. Patreon.com/13pod. The game was everything I hoped it would be, and everything was going great. There was just one problem: my neighbor. After that first night, when we really let loose, when he started banging on the wall, after that, I started noticing a change. At first, I couldn't put my finger on it, and I didn't know exactly when it started happening. But the air felt heavier when we would cross paths, and we started crossing paths a lot more often. When I got home from work, he would come outside and go to his work van. A few minutes later, I'd hear him coming back up. It was like he was just going to get something, or just pretending to. It got to where I started to dread passing him on the stairs. Our walls were far too thin. I overheard his phone calls. I could hear his TV. And I knew that he could hear me. And on the nights when my boyfriend stayed over, I knew that he could hear us too. In a kind of reversal, when we were being intimate, I started noticing that I was being more quiet, and he was too, just following my lead. I couldn't help but to imagine that creep listening in on the other side of the wall. We'd been together for about 6 months at that point, and I'd mentioned my neighbor and the way he always seemed to be around when I was coming and going, how I thought he might be watching me, watching us. But I never said anything about him making it a point to cross paths, coming out when he saw me getting home. One morning, I came out and found a flat tire on my car. My first thought was that he'd cut my tire, but after looking at it for a minute, I found a screw lodged into it. I'd probably run over it in the last couple of days, and the tire was leaking slowly. But I couldn't help but think of all the tools I'd seen him packing and unpacking into that van, and how he liked to park close to me. I couldn't prove it, but somehow, I knew that he'd done it. Either he left it there for me to run over, or he'd driven the screw in there at night while the whole complex was asleep. I'd only mentioned it in passing before, but that night, I unloaded all of it on my boyfriend. How it had been getting worse. I'd caught him sitting in his van sometimes. I was worried he was following me, but I couldn't prove any of it.
"Why don't you come stay with me for a while? I'll explain it to the others. They'll understand."
I wanted to. I really did. But I also didn't want to impose on his roommates. I didn't want to feel like a charity case. Besides, my lease was up soon, and then I could get out of here.
"What if I stay over more? And anytime you need to stay at my place, you're absolutely welcome to be there. I promise the others are not going to care at all."
I did like the idea of him staying over more. But just as it all seemed to be building to something, coming to a boiling point, my neighbor did something that he hadn't done in the entire time I'd lived here. He went away for a few days. When I noticed that he was gone, it felt like a weight off my shoulders. My boyfriend and I talked more freely. We turned up the volume on the TV. A few days later, when I came home from work and I saw that work van in the parking lot again, I knew my neighbor was back. But pretty quickly, I noticed that something had changed. He'd stopped trying to pass me in the hall. I didn't see him looking down from his window anymore. Maybe something had happened. A switch was flipped, and he was over it. I really didn't care what it was. I was just glad that it seemed to be over. But even so, there was rarely a night when I stayed there alone. My boyfriend spent almost every night with me, and I spent one or two nights a week at his place. As we approached 9 months together, my boyfriend asked me if I wanted to go for a drive. We got on the freeway and drove into the city. We got off the exit for his neighborhood. I thought we were going to his place, But we went a couple of streets over and stopped in front of a house for rent.
I know you really like the neighborhood, and I know you're not wanting to spend another year next to your creepy neighbor.
He hesitated for a second, then he came out with it.
What if we got a place like this? A place together?
So, we started looking for a place, beginning with the house he took me to that first night. We applied, but we didn't get it, and we kept looking. I didn't say anything when it happened. Maybe I've just conditioned myself to be on the lookout for it. But when we were looking at that first house, down the street, I saw one of those white work vans, like my neighbor drives. Even though he'd stopped watching me, stopped trying to cross paths on the stairs, there were days when I would get off work and I would see a work van across the parking lot at my office. I'd see them in traffic, too. It was a common vehicle. They were all over the place. And I started to feel like I was being crazy, overreacting. Maybe he found a girlfriend. Or maybe during that time he was away, he found another woman to stalk. Who can say? Despite my heightened awareness of the all-too-common white work van, it seemed like it was over. And soon enough, my boyfriend and I would have our own place. We would only have one or two neighbors in the old brick and stone walk-up buildings that we were looking at in the new neighborhood. On a Saturday morning, about 6 weeks before my lease was up, we laid in my bed and I absently checked my email. And there it was. We'd been approved for an apartment. It was one of our favorites that we'd visited. It was a row of two-story units making up a fourplex. We would be in the end unit. The bedroom was in the corner, and it didn't share a wall with any neighbors. No more worrying about who was listening to us. Better yet, there were windows on both walls, and they looked out onto old trees and even older buildings. There were restaurants and corner shops, and it was a world away from my giant complex in the suburbs. We were ecstatic, and right away, we started planning the move. I emailed back and asked the landlord if it would be possible to see the place one more time, just to plan out where our furniture would go. Later that morning, he responded. He was fine with us coming by to see the place. It was already vacant and needed some work done. He'd have one of the contractors let me in. I arranged a time with the landlord when he knew that someone would be there working. I found a spot on the street a few houses down and walked up to the front door. It smelled like sawdust, or maybe drywall dust. I wasn't sure. And the door was propped open with wires running outside and around the corner into a little parking lot hidden behind the building. I knocked and pushed the door open, calling out, "Hello?" to anyone inside. I heard a rustling of objects being put down on the floor and then steps coming around the corner and toward the hall. I stepped inside. The storm door came to rest, cracked open on the cables running outside. I somehow knew before he came around the corner. And then he did. And my worst fear was confirmed. It was him. He tilted his head as if he didn't recognize me. He said something like, "Oh, hi," or, "Oh, it's you." I didn't even hear it over the adrenaline rushing in my ears. He had a big plumbing wrench in his hand. I staggered backward, almost tripping over my own feet and trying to stammer some kind of reason to leave.
I'm sorry. I think I'm in the wrong place. I said it as I turned on my heels and walked as fast as I could without giving away my panic. But it must have been written all over my face. I ran down the block to my car and I got in. As fast as I could, I flung it into drive and pulled out down the street. A few blocks down, I pulled over and, I don't know, I just kind of fell apart. Had it been some kind of coincidence? Or had all of those white work vans I'd seen really been him? Following us, watching us. Had he seen the places we were looking at and then found ways to get hired on to do some work in them? Or was it all just some huge coincidence? I don't know. A coincidence seemed unlikely. But snaking his way into a job in the exact place and time I would be there, that felt far-fetched too. Maybe he'd been listening through the wall. It wasn't impossible. I'd always worried that he was listening to other things, but he could have heard where we'd been approved. He could have even heard about the plan to go and see the place. One thing was for sure. I hated it. But we weren't going to be able to move into this place. Not with him knowing where we were, knowing the layout, where the alarm was, and what windows might be loose. We were going to have to start over, from square one. We talked about our options. He didn't try to talk me into going with this apartment anyway, but I could tell he was disappointed. We would keep looking, and worst case scenario, I would stay with him for a little bit if we didn't have something lined up before my lease was up. His roommates would just have to deal with it. It wouldn't be the worst thing. I hadn't spent a lot of time over there, but they were nice, and they had always been friendly. That's why it didn't seem strange to get a text from one of his roommates. It was a Friday morning. The night before had been one of the rare nights that my boyfriend didn't stay over at my place. I'd just gotten to work. Both of his roommates were out of town for the week, and since he had the place to himself, we had plans to spend the weekend at his place for a change. I read the text from his roommate, and I was alarmed. They asked if I'd talked to him. I wrote back saying no, but we don't always text this early. There was a sudden lump in my chest. The onset of panic. My phone started buzzing. His roommate was calling. This wasn't good. I picked up the phone and got up from my desk in one motion, making my way to the hallway for some privacy. I answered, and I asked if everything was okay. They told me the landlord had called. Something happened. They were both on their way back to the city, and I needed to get to the house as soon as I could. It was a gas leak. It had probably started later in the evening the night before. Maybe he'd bumped the stove and knocked the gas line loose. Maybe it had worked itself loose over time. But it was enough to allow for a slow leak. I was devastated. After the funeral, his roommates and I promised to stay in touch. But we didn't. I didn't know what to do with myself. Everything was tied up with him. My routine, my plans. We'd been working on building a life together. And now I was just lost. I had a lot of time on my hands. And when I thought about the gas leak, I don't know. I just didn't buy it. almost right away, after everything happened, I started to notice that my neighbor was watching me again, looking through the blinds, waiting in his van, the orange parking lights on, watching for me to come outside after work. I looked up what kind of person works on gas lines, and I was surprised to find out that plumbers install and maintain gas lines. I guess gas flows through pipes, just like water does. And I couldn't shake the memories, seeing a work van pass by when I was at my boyfriend's place, when I went to see the new apartment, the plumbing wrench in his hand as he stood in the hallway. I told the police what I thought, but there was nothing to be done. They couldn't prove anything. There was no sign of forced entry, no sign of tampering with the gas lines. But I couldn't help but wonder if a really good plumber could mess around with the connections without leaving a trace. My lease was up in a couple of weeks. I arranged to move back home for a little while, to get out of the city. I scheduled the move on a work day, sometime after my neighbor had gone to work and before he got home. I didn't want him to have a chance to follow me. But even though I'm on the other side of the state, those plain white work vans are everywhere. And I can't help but wonder, who am I going to see in the driver's seat when I pull up next to one of them?
Thank you for joining us for this episode of 13. If you like what you heard, stop what you're doing and leave a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts, especially if you're listening on Spotify. Ratings and reviews over there would really help us out. This has been Tell Me What You Like, written by Ian Epperson and Brooke Jeanette. Narrated by me, Brooke Jeanette. The boyfriend was Mason Amadeus. Music composed by Caleb Ritchie. Editing and sound design by Brooke Jeanette. Additional assistance from Bridget Freeman. Our producer-level patrons are Tattooed Fox, Rhiannon, Sean Geary, Anthony Diaz, Michael Vasquez, Amy Harper, Jackie Kay, Delta Tango, Chantel Payne, Nick, Stephanie Klinger, Jake R., Abigail Perez, and Emily Toll. Thank you all so much for your support. Click the link in the show notes to learn more about joining us on Patreon. And check us out on social media. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram under Pod13. And you can join the Facebook group for 13 Podcast. Just look for the logo, and you'll find links in the show notes. If you'd like to submit a story to be performed on the show, or if you'd like to contact us about anything else, you can get in touch at info@13podcast.com. You'll find submission guidelines and other info on our website, 13podcast.com. You can find that in the show notes too.
Bridget Freeman is crawling through your walls.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.